And you're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast. And we've got two people on the line today. We've got Christy Lee Tinnell and Tim Sullivan. Hello, you guys.
G'day.
Hey, Annie.
It worked. I'm highly relieved. You're from, organisers for the Australian Services Union, and you've got some things to tell us about launch housing. Things aren't as happy as it should be. Can you tell us what's going on?
Yeah, we can. That's right. Yeah, Tim, you go. It's hard. We can't see each other. For the listeners, we're going to cut each other off accidentally. So, Annie, please bear with us.
Certainly will. G'day, Tim. Tell us.
The ASU members at Launch Housing have already started industrial action. They've started with some low-level industrial action around their enterprise agreement negotiations. And they're heading towards a stop work action on Monday from 12 till 1:30. So the issues being during negotiations, members are seeking a classification review and formal consultation. And basically, the employer, every time we meet, they just say no and they cross their arms. There's no discussion. There's very little negotiation actually occurring. We're going there, and delegates are going there to the negotiating table in good faith and trying to negotiate for a good outcome for all the workers at Launch Housing, and management are basically refusing on all of the key points.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because Launch Housing has a good reputation as a service provider for homelessness people. I mean, it's. Can you give us a little bit of a background to Launch Housing's history?
Yeah, we absolutely can. So they're a massive employer in the housing and homelessness space, and they do provide some amazing services. These workers have been slogging it out through the pandemic, through site exposures in COVID, through trying to get these really vulnerable clients off the streets, members of our community. And Launch has been doing a lot of that work. They continually get renewed funding from the government to deliver these services. They've got hundreds of properties across Victoria. They provide crisis accommodation. They provide support for those in public and supported accommodation. So a massive employer. We've got very high union density there, so we're really proud of that. We've got some very organised delegates and members across each of the sites, which are spread from the north to the far southeast. And Launch were originally a merger a few years ago of, if you remember, Hanover Services and Homeground Services. They became a massive organisation. And now they're not playing ball.
So they handle 200 properties, and this includes, this gives us an idea of, because homelessness services, unless you're a homeless person, often just is this, you know, amorphous sort of understanding, but it's a very practical thing. I mean, they deal with rental properties at market rate, below market rate, and social housing and rooming houses. So it's a broad church, effectively. And they also do outreach. Now, these are very challenging areas of work.
That's right. I think that these workers are the people who are there for you when everything else falls apart, and they help you sort yourself out. And they're you know, as you sort of mentioned there, they sort of you know, in some ways operate in the shadows, out of the limelight, while maybe the people at the top get the kudos for the work that the frontline workers are doing. You know, at the same time, these workers are doing all of this. Pretty challenging work in what is an even more challenging time for everyone, being through the COVID pandemic. Their employer won't even show them the respect of, you know, showing them how their classifications are worked out and ensuring that they're paid appropriately, and consulting with them on appropriate change, or on, you know, upcoming change.
Well, it's interesting because, like you say, the CEO, Bevan Warner, has been building a very high profile as an advocate, in inverted commas, for homelessness, and even appearing on the block. So he's, you know, he's down there getting there, going to the middle ground to make it into something normalised in the general public. And one would say that that was about fundraising and presenting yourself as being an important service. and, you know, being smart. But this idea that they don't actually want to sit down and talk to their workforce is quite interesting. I mean, Christy Lee, you were saying that yesterday when I was speaking to you that the management pulled some swifty. So can you sort of give people an understanding of a recalcitrant management?
Yeah, I can. It's not a hard task you've set me in this environment. We've had multiple meetings with launch management. The meetings are run really amazingly by these solid delegates, and we wish we were along here today, but it is hard getting delegates to talk to the media because you don't want them to get pulled into disciplinary meetings. So they've sent us along today, but I think quite a few of them are listening from home and their friends and family are backing them in this. So in terms of the enterprise agreement meetings that we've been having, there has been discussions, but we really argue that there's really positional bargaining going on here, and we're going to the meetings, the employer's talking, but there's no movement and there's no seemingly genuine consideration of what our members are seeking. We're getting a lot of hard no's, hard no's, hard no's. Our members are giving us speaking points and arguments to make and some real live examples of what the employer's not agreeing to and how that's going to impact them on the ground in their working lives. And the employer's just not genuinely engaging in the conversation. The delegates are asking questions. Sometimes we're not getting answers to those. But I think the swifty you're talking about yesterday is the employer wrote to all staff, asked them if they're taking industrial action, said if they didn't reply to a survey, they wouldn't be paying those who do indicate they're going on strike and those who don't respond to the survey. So
they're applying pressure. Are you still there?
I think we've lost Christy Lee there, but absolutely. They're applying pressure and you know, potentially trying to frighten people out of taking that industrial action and, you know, sort of forcing people to state their position to the employer where, you know, the advice that we've received is that that's not actually required and that people don't have to reply to that that email and notify the employer.
It's interesting, isn't it, because you describe the workers with their hands tied behind their backs because they're not allowed to speak up in a public forum about what's going on for them in their workplace, and at the same time, baseline intimidation from the employer.
That's right. Yeah, yep. And that's been, you know, the similar sort of double standards have been shown throughout, you know, negotiation and some other dealings with the employer where the positioning from, you know, the employer's negotiating team is quite hostile. But the minute that anyone on the ASU bargaining team shows any emotion or, starts to get a little bit heightened about, you know, responding to something, that's when the concern kicks in that they might be up on, a disciplinary, procedure or that they might get, some other action taken against them.
It really underlines why collective action is important and why the support of the union is important, because it's like a boxing match with, but you're tied to the floor.
Totally agree, yes.
Yeah. You've already mentioned a couple of the claims.
Yep.
The classification review. Yep. Now, this is tied directly to pay rates above the and the call for pay rates being above the absolute legal minimum, casuals progressing pay bans after 12 months of service, and and then it follows on to consulting staff before major change and changes to the use of fixed term contracts. Now, this, of course, goes to the belly of the beast of our capitalist system. So can you talk a little bit about these issues?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you hear me again?
Yeah, we can.
Yes, you're back.
Sorry, I'm not sure it's the internet connection or something.
No. It's the ether and it's raining.
It is. Yes, it probably is. But But yeah, that's right. These are the core issues for workers the world over. You want job security. All we're asking for is a clause that is really tight that means that the employer can only use fixed-term contracts where it's a genuine fixed-term role. So unfortunately, in the housing and homelessness space, in the social community services space, there is funding that is short fixed-term funding, pilot programs, etc. And in those instances, our members and delegates understand that the employer is going to be, their hands are going to be tied and they're going to have to offer fixed-term contracts. But what our members and delegates want to ensure is that they are offered ongoing secure employment in every role that's possible. So the employer can't just pop them on a contract because that's what they want to do, or they want to extend the trial period essentially and see how workers pan out. In terms of the casualisation of the workforce, members employed at Launch Housing, they can be there for 10 years. Some of the programs, there's not over-casualisation at Launch, but some of the programs really rely on some dedicated, trained and skilled casual workers to fill in where there are gaps. So if we look at the crisis accommodation, for example, you're going to get people calling in sick and they've got a casual pool of workers. Some of them were permanent employees years ago at Launch and have stayed on as casuals to support the organisation. Now, they start at a certain pay point. Everybody else progresses as they go through along. As long as they're doing the job as they should be, each year they progress till they meet the top of their pay bands. Not so for these casual workers. And Launch is saying, nah, no way, we're keeping them there and we're going to keep them starting at that lower band. Those are some major issues for some of our workers. One of the other issues we haven't mentioned, Annie, for our workers is it's really hard, particularly during the pandemic, for our members who work shifts. So some of the overnight workers in the crisis accommodation, the weekend workers, when they take a sick shift, they just get paid a base rate, not based on their penalties. And we're seeking to try and get them to be paid as if the shift were worked for, whenever they take personal leave. And again, Launch is saying they're just not looking at that. And for our workers working in those services, they're saying sometimes they're going to work when they're not feeling up to it. They don't have sick symptoms, but when, you know, they're having a bad day or they might need to take it off for mental health, etc., but they have to go to work because otherwise they can't pay their own rent.
Yeah, it's really difficult work. It is really challenging work. I mean, it's like this thing about, you know, people say about teachers, and it's not comparative, but, you know, people say, oh, teachers have an easy ride, except that when they themselves are put in front of a whole class of people and have to deliver material that's been developed by the teacher, they suddenly realise it's actually crushingly hard. Well, mm-hmm. in this area, you've got this highly emotional and situation where the worker is actually absolutely in charge of outcomes. You know, like that they're the people who have to deal with any crisis. They're the ones who have to be alert every minute of their time in these places.
And you know what, Addie? Tim and I were talking the other day and we were talking about the fierce advocacy of our Launch ASU delegates throughout this process. And if I was ever to find myself in a situation where I needed some support from a service like Launch, I would trust that I would be in fantastic hands of the best advocates that we've got in the state, because these workers have just continued to sit at that table. They're telling management they're not backing down. They're really clear about what their points of contention are and that they're sticking together. And I think those skills are directly transferred from their skills as advocates on the ground for the most vulnerable in the community. So they are amazing workers. My hat's off to them every day, and we are so proud of them for staying strong on this issue.
Tell me about the stop work and the process, because it's a softly approach. It began on Monday, last Monday, and it's continued.
That's
yes,
right.
So, Tim, you want to touch on this one?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So it started on the 11th of October with, some low-level actions. So it started with members wearing badges, so stopping work for a very brief period to attach badges to their clothing. And so, you know, and to wear union, you know, T-shirts to work, that kind of stuff. So just building awareness that this is happening and making it clear that these people are united and that people are together in this, that it's not just perhaps the, you know, the very staunch delegates at the bargaining table, but it is the broader membership. And then it stepped up to using union footers in their emails and changing their voicemail, both to reflect that they're taking industrial action.
That really must have got up their nose.
Yeah, that's right. And what we've heard, which is fantastic, is, you know, not just that it's raising awareness, but also that some members are getting responses from people outside the organisation saying good luck with your industrial action, which is a fantastic thing for members who might feel like they're sort of isolated in their work and in their action, to be getting that from the broader community and stakeholders. And then, you know, management haven't... you know, still we've been at the negotiating table since that, and management haven't made any, you know, concessions, haven't agreed to negotiate properly. So the next step is industrial action of stopping work on Monday for an hour. So there's two pieces of industrial action on Monday. One is that the ban on workers taking lunch at the same time has been, you know, like everyone's going to take their lunch at the same time. Previously, and in normal circumstances, workers would stagger their lunch breaks so that service continues. But they're all take their lunch break and then at the same time, and then they'll take industrial action following that of stopping work, walking out, being out the front, you know, holding ASU flags and standing together and showing that they're united and that they're committed to, this struggle for what they believe are their rights and what they need.
And you want the public to support you, don't you?
Absolutely. Yep, 100%. So if listeners or, you know, if anyone wants to support the workers who are taking this action, there's launch housing sites, as Christy Lee said, there's launch housing sites all over Melbourne, all over Greater Melbourne, and they're listed on the Launch Housing website. If you go to Contact Us, you can see all of the different sites. And there are members taking stop work action at every site. So there's very likely, if you're in the Greater Melbourne area, there's very likely a launch site near you where people will be taking action, and they'll be out the front of those sites from 12 p.m. on Monday.
Yeah, well, I'll say Collingwood, Dandenong, Fitzroy, Northcote, South Bank, South Melbourne, Glen Waverley, Broadmeadows, St Kilda East, Paran, Northcote, Cheltenham, St Kilda. There's lots to choose from.
Absolutely.
That's